Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, which is done in collaboration with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And the title of today's program is The Benefits of Clinical Trials for Triple Negative Breast Cancer. And this program is made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. We really want to thank them for their support of this program. So now we have over 350 participants on this call today, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. However, we also have a number of international participants from Australia, Canada, Colombia, Germany, Greece, India, Kenya, Nigeria, Swaziland, Trinidad, Tobago, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call, and it's a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Marcela Mazo-Canoa. And Dr. Canoa is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, Breast Medical Oncology, UT Health, San Antonio Mays Cancer Center. And Dr. Canoa will be addressing the treatment of triple negative breast cancer, why clinical trials are important as a treatment option for triple negative breast cancer, what happens in a clinical trial, stages of clinical trials, and new research in the treatment of triple negative breast cancer. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Canoa.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and the organizers for the opportunity to connect with all of you today. So we're going to start the discussion by covering the treatment of triple negative breast cancer. Triple negative breast cancer is characterized by the absence of sensitivities to estrogen and progesterone and lack of overexpression to HER2. It constitutes about 15% of the cases that we see when we diagnose somebody with breast cancer. I'm going to be dividing the treatment of triple negative breast cancer depending on how we treat advanced disease, meaning people that are living with metastatic breast cancer, versus how we approach patients with early stage disease, which are stages 1 to 3 with triple negative breast cancer. I will cover first stage 1 to stage 3 triple negative breast cancer. So usually these patients will benefit from multimodality treatment, meaning that their physicians will discuss with them options such as lumpectomy or mastectomy, followed or preceded by the use of neoadjuvant chemotherapy. I will say that most patients that present to their medical oncologist with tumors that measure more than 2 centimeters or have evidence of lymph node involvement benefit from the use of neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy. What I mean by neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy, this consists in doing some form of systemic treatment before patients go to surgery. So why do we do neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy in these patients? This is with the purpose of making those tumors smaller or decreasing the stage or downstaging. And it gives us important information as far as how the tumor responds to the treatment that we're giving. And it helps us best tailor the adjuvant strategy that we will do to mitigate the risk of cancer coming back. By adjuvant, I mean the therapy that we do after patients complete surgery. The treatment of this disease is usually in the neoadjuvant setting, a combination of chemoimmunotherapy, and we use medications such as anthracyclines, like doxorubicin or epirubicin, joined with a medication called cyclophosphamide. This is a cytotoxic agent, and patients also get a taxane, which is usually paclitaxel, and carboplatin. And it's new that we now have the ability to offer immunotherapy to those patients in the neoadjuvant settings, and the medication that is currently approved in this setting is pembrolizumab. After our patients finish the treatment regimen that will usually last for about 6 months, they will go and have surgery. Depending on how the tumor responds to the treatment that we did, we'll decide if we continue pembrolizumab alone, this is immunotherapy, for 9 more cycles, or if we need to add our medications to mitigate the risk of cancer coming back. The radiation oncologist will determine if those patients will benefit from radiation after the completion of surgery. When we look at metastatic breast cancer, treatment is a little bit different, as in this case, we're trying to mitigate symptoms and prevent cancer spread. The current treatments that we do at the present time consist of the use of chemotherapy combined with immunotherapy. Your doctor will test the tumor to see if the cancer cells have sensitivity to pembrolizumab, which is the immunotherapy that is approved in this setting, and will combine the treatment with a chemotherapy of their choice, depending on your medical history. Usually, after the disease ceases to respond to the medication, you might see that your oncologist will perhaps switch the treatment to a different agent called an antibody drug conjugate or other forms of chemotherapy. And this brings me to my next point, which is clinical trials. Clinical trials are important to patients that are dealing with cancer, both in the early stage setting and in the metastatic setting. So why is it important to participate in clinical trials when someone is dealing with triple negative breast cancer? It is important because it will provide our patients with cutting edge therapies that are not available otherwise. It offers novel combinations of immunotherapy with other novel medications that are coming our way. It can also help identify biomarkers to treat this disease better. It can improve the survival for our patients that are going to be affected with these diseases in the future. And would also help to specifically advance the science of cancer care in minority women and or small populations affected by triple negative breast cancer. Now, what happens when somebody is participating in a clinical trial? So when somebody is participating in a clinical trial, the treating medical oncologist will determine if the patient meets the inclusion criteria that this trial is specifically looking for. If you meet the criteria and you're determined to be a good candidate for this therapy, you will be offered this clinical trial. Clinical trials are done in phases. So usually there is a phase 1, a phase 2, a phase 3, and I will also mention a phase 4. Phase 1 are a first-in-human studies whose objective is to determine the safe dose of a certain medication, evaluate side effects, and they usually have a small number of participants in them. Usually, phase 1 clinical trials will evolve into phase 2 clinical trials in which we still assess the effectiveness, continue checking for safety, and we offer those trials to a larger group of patients. When we look at phase 3, we compare new treatments to the standard of care, we have larger populations, and we randomize them to receive either the therapy that is under the experiment or the standard of care therapy. And these clinical trials usually help us determine if a new therapy will become the standard of care for these patients. And phase 4 is the post-approval monitoring. So when a medication goes through the approval process and is being used by everybody, phase 4 clinical trials will confirm that these medications are safe and effective. Now, what new research is becoming available in the triple negative space? And I will share two exciting publications and big clinical trials that we had available to us in the recent past. And for this, I'll refer to two antibody drug conjugate agents. These are special medications that have monoclonal antibodies that are attached to what we call a payload or a chemotherapy type of medication that is attached to them, and they attach to the cancer cell. There are two big studies that I will mention. That is the ASCEND-03 study and the ASCEND-304 study. These two trials that I'm mentioning are very important because they're currently challenging the first line of therapy that we offer to our metastatic patients. These trials are looking into the combination of sacituzumab, which is an antibody drug conjugate, with the addition of pembrolizumab, which is an agent that we give to patients when they have sensitivity for PD-L1. Or we give sacituzumab as a single agent in patients that don't have sensitivity to PD-L1 or, and are not a candidate for immunotherapy. In this case, we offered this as a first line for these patients, and these results show that this might be the new option for first line therapy. I will also highlight the results of our recent study called the TROPION-02 study. TROPION looked at a different antibody drug conjugate called datopotamab deruxtecan. This is another medication that has some differences with the antibody drug conjugate that I mentioned, and that show very promising results in the first-line setting of the treatment of metastatic disease, especially for those patients that have an early recurrence, meaning patients that have their cancer coming back after they have completed the treatment 12 months before or less. The promising kind of important information about this agent is that it's a very well-tolerated agent with fewer side effects compared to other types of treatment that we do. And with that, Dr. Messer, I'll hand it back to you, and I thank everybody for connecting with us today and for your attention.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Meso-Canola. That was a superb presentation. And since you are the first speaker, you've really set the stage for the program today. You've provided so much information for our participants, and I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Just an outstanding, stellar presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Saba Shak, and Dr. Shak is Assistant Professor, Division of Hematology Oncology, UT Health San Antonio, Mays Cancer Center. Dr. Shak will be addressing the meaning of informed consent, benefits and risks of participation, how and where clinical trials are conducted, how to participate in clinical trials, specific questions to ask your healthcare team about clinical trials, guidelines to prepare telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Shak.
Thank you so much. Hello, everybody, and thank you for being here. Thank you to the organizers, and thank you to Dr. Meso-Canola for that wonderful overview. So I'll be talking about clinical trials and telehealth appointments, two tools that can really expand your treatment options and empower you or your loved ones in the care journey with triple-negative breast cancer. My goal is to help you understand what informed consent in the context of a clinical trial really means, learn how clinical trials work and how to participate in clinical trials, highlight some questions you can ask your care team, and also how to feel prepared and confident for your telehealth visits. So if you consider joining a clinical trial, you'll hear the term informed consent. Informed consent essentially means that you have received clear information about the study, you understand the potential benefits and risks of participating in the study, you understand the alternative to participate in the study. Oftentimes, this will be referred to as standard of care. You voluntarily decide whether you are interested in participating, and you can withdraw at any time. And I really want to highlight this point because the studies are always voluntary, so if you change your mind, you can end your participation. It is not a binding contract. To break down the components of informed consent a little bit more, you'll learn the purpose of the study, you'll learn about the treatment or intervention that's being tested, and how this differs from standard of care. You should hear about possible side effects. It's also good to think about potential time commitments. This could include the treatment itself and any study procedures that will be required. For example, some studies may include extra biopsies, scans, or laboratory testing. You can also consider cost and insurance coverage. Studies will usually pay for any portion of the study that is not considered standard of care. Investigational drugs will typically be covered. However, standard of care aspects of the study could be billed to the insurance. For example, whether you're on a clinical study or not, most patients with metastatic cancer will be getting CT scans. These CT scans could be billed to your insurance in the same way they would be if you were getting treatment outside of the context of a clinical trial. Generally speaking, potential benefits to participating in a clinical trial include access to new therapies before they're widely available, and typically they become widely available after they're FDA approved. This could include promising immunotherapy or targeted agents that are novel. You'll get closer monitoring by a research team in addition to your clinical team. And you may also be able to contribute to research that may help future patients in addition to yourself. There are potential risks of participating in a clinical trial. One is there could be unknown side effects. This is particularly the case if it's a first-in-human study. Some clinical trials use drugs that have already been heavily studied in other trials, or they may even be FDA approved in a different context for a different type of breast cancer or even for a different type of cancer altogether. These drugs, unlike in a first-in-human study, will have a lot more information about side effects available. Additionally, if it's a randomized clinical trial, meaning you will be randomly assigned to the treatment arm and neither the patient nor their physician gets to choose that arm, some patients may feel an emotional stress of uncertainty prior to the randomization process, while other patients are comfortable feeling undergoing randomization. Importantly, clinical trials follow strict safety guidelines and are monitored by ethics committees and regulatory agencies. Clinical trials are conducted in a variety of locations. They happen in academic medical centers, in community hospitals, in cancer centers, and sometimes through multi-center national or international collaborations. Clinical trials are categorized by multiple phases of study, and Dr. Mazzo Cagnola went over the phases of study in her portion, so I won't go through the detail of those, but most drugs will move forward through the pathway of phase 1, 2, and 3. Trials can test many different kinds of interventions. So types of trials can include new chemotherapy combinations, immunotherapy approaches, antibody-drug conjugates, targeted therapies. There are also some trials that may not necessarily target an intervention for treatment, but they may include lifestyle or supportive care interventions, which are also important considerations. If you are interested in participating in a clinical trial, this is an important point to bring up with your treating oncologist. They may have some trials that you're eligible for at the center that you're being seen. If not, they can also refer you to another center as appropriate. Standard of care treatments are usually the same across cancer centers. However, clinical trials can vary by site, and there may be different trials available in different locations. If you and your physician identify a clinical trial that you're interested in participating in, the first step will be discussing the eligibility with your oncologist. There can be very specific criteria based on the type of cancer, the prior treatments you received, and any other medical conditions you may have. If you are interested in participating, you'll review and sign the informed consent. And after this process, you may have additional screening tests to complete. And this can include blood work, imaging, biopsies, which may further determine if you will still be eligible for the study. If additional screening procedures are needed and completed and are within parameters, then you can begin the study treatment. Something to keep in mind is not everyone qualifies for every trial, and that's okay. Your oncologist can help identify options appropriate based on your stage and treatment history. So next, I'd like to provide some example questions to consider or ask if you are considering participating in the clinical trial. The first will be some questions about the trial itself, what treatment is being studied, how does this differ from the standard of care, what phase is this trial, and has this treatment been studied before? It's also important to ask about any potential side effects that can occur and how side effects will be monitored on the study. Another point of consideration is going to be about logistics. How often are visits required? Are there any extra scans or biopsies? And then lastly, not all trials are, depending on the location of the trial, you may want to consider if you'll continue seeing your same oncologist or if you'll be referred to a different trial group, in which case you may be followed with a different oncologist. And I think it's always helpful to bring a family member or friend to these appointments because a lot of information can certainly be covered. Now, shifting gears a little bit, I'll move forward and talk about telehealth appointments. I think telehealth has become an important part of cancer care. And to really get the most out of your telehealth visit, there's a couple of things that we can do, consider ahead of time to be prepared. One is just a few practical things like testing your internet connection, make sure you have a good connection, ensuring your device is charged, downloading any apps that you may need. There's lots of different platforms that are being used for telemedicine. Some are integrated with an electronic health record, and the patient portal may give you access to that link, and others have separate links. It's important to check your camera and your microphone just so you can have an effective visit with your physician, and then also having a quiet and private space, to review all of your medical history. Things that are These things are unique to health, to telehealth, but otherwise some of the preparation for a clinical visit will overlap with what you will want to consider for an in-person visit as well, such as making a note of any changes to medications, writing down any symptoms or concerns you may have. If you have questions about scans or labs, this is an important time to ask those, and then any other concerns you may have. And lastly, I'd like to touch on open notes. So many health systems now provide access to your doctor's notes through patient portals, and this is often called open notes. This allows you to review your care plan. However, something to keep in mind is that the first is that there's multiple purposes to the physician notes. So that really influences the way that things need to be documented. So one of the main purposes is communicating with other physicians and other members of the healthcare team to make sure that everybody who's caring for you is on the same page. Another purpose is for insurance companies, especially in oncology, they do careful review of documentation for authorization of various treatments. So a lot of the formatting for notes happens with that audience in mind. So if you ever have any questions or need clarifications, it's important to ask. And another thing I'd like to highlight is about test results. So there's lots of different approaches to this, but what I typically recommend is if it's possible, and it's not always possible, but if it is possible, it's good to schedule a test in close proximity to when your follow-up will be so that you can review your results together with your physician. For example, if you know you'll be having a biopsy, scheduling a follow-up 7 to 10 days after the biopsy can be helpful to review those results. And I just bring this up because in speaking with patients, I've heard many share concerns about finding out about a certain diagnosis or progression through scan review through the patient portal. And so it's just important to think about how you want to receive the information. But I think overall, it's really wonderful to be able to have direct access to your health record so you can be informed. So to summarize, clinical trials and telehealth appointments are tools that can expand your options and help you stay actively engaged in your care. And things to remember is that informed consent empowers you. Clinical trials are very carefully monitored. You should ask questions, of your healthcare team for any clarification you may need, and preparation can improve your telehealth visit experience. Most importantly, you're not alone in this. Your physician, your healthcare team is there to guide you every step of the way. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chick. That was just a superb, really, just a stellar presentation and covering so many different aspects of clinical trials. And I know there'll be a lot of questions to you during the Q&A as well, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Arlene Brothers, and Ms. Brothers is Interim Executive Director, Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And she'll be discussing the free national programs and services of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And she'll be providing information about their website, their toll-free, the telephone number, and their email address as well. Also, I should say that we are partnering with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation on this program and on all of the programs that we do on Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. We've always partnered with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation on every program that we do. So I just want to thank you so much, and I'm going to turn this program over to Ms. Brothers.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and hello to everyone who's joining today. Thank you very much to Drs. Mazzo, Canola, and Sheck for your very informative presentations. So the TNBC Foundation is extremely proud to partner with Cancer Care on this and other workshops where the focus is specifically on triple-negative breast cancer. You can find podcast recordings of previous TNBC-focused workshops on the Cancer Care website by searching triple-negative breast cancer or by visiting tnbcwebinars.org. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has a variety of educational and support resources on our website, tnbcfoundation.org. But since we're talking about clinical trials, I would like to specifically mention our TNBC Clinical Trials Matching Service page, which can be found at tnbctrials.org. Our matching services are user-friendly and easy to navigate and have options to reach out to live navigators for help. So a lot of this can be very confusing. It's nice to have a nice, easy, user-friendly portal. For additional TNBC-specific programs and resources, please visit tnbcfoundation.org or follow us on social media for regular updates and announcements, such as our upcoming TNBC Awareness Month that kicks off on TNBC Day, March 3rd, right around the corner. We have a wonderful lineup of virtual programs and workshops, including art therapy, mental health, patient meetups, and a special podcast episode produced in collaboration with Cancer Care. So thank you all for joining us today, and I'll now turn the program back to Dr. Mesner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Feathers. It's such a pleasure to be partnering with you on today's program and on all of every program that we ever do on triple negative breast cancer. We've been partnering with you for, I think, over 20 years, and that partnership will continue. And I know there'll be lots of questions to you during the Q&A as well. And our last speaker is Ms. Jennifer LaPietra, and she is an oncology social worker, patient assistance program manager, cancer care, and she'll be addressing Cancer Care's free programs and services, our Hope Line, and website. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. LaPietra.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. It's an honor to participate in today's program. My role here at Cancer Care includes working with both women diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer and their families. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together to ensure that those diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer have access to free psychosocial services and support, as well as information on clinical trials. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, or communication with one's medical team. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded today's program. Some comprehensive services the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care provide include resource navigation services, counseling, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. By calling the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation helpline, individuals are connected to an oncology social worker who is aware of the physical, emotional, and practical challenges that may arise when diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Individuals diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer may choose to supplement existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Joining a support group in particular can offer the chance for triple negative breast cancer patients to speak with one another, gather information, and provide support. Cancer Care offers triple negative breast cancer specific national online support groups, which are moderated by oncology social workers. Such online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness or anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources. You can register for an online support group through cancercare.org by selecting Our Services, then Support Groups. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout one's treatment. Please know that if you are encountering such financial hardships, there are organizations that may be able to help you. Cancer Care's resource navigation offers short-term, strengths-based approach to service patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. As we have heard today, clinical trials can test the benefits of new treatment for someone diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Clinical trials are tested in phases, with each phase having a different and specific purpose, including safety, how well a treatment may work for a certain type of cancer, and to compare the new treatment to the established approved treatment. Clinical trials may provide an opportunity for patients to access the latest in cancer care and help identify new therapies for people diagnosed with cancer. Also, as Ms. Brothers mentioned, the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation offers clinical trial matching services that can make your search for these trials faster and easier. Callers can speak to a trained clinical trial navigator by calling their helpline at 855-731-6036 or by visiting the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation website. If you are interested in learning more about the services the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care offer, we encourage you to call the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Helpline. Our oncology social workers share additional information about our services and can also help you explore ways to connect with others, including our support groups, financial assistance resources, and clinical trial matching services. It has been a pleasure to be a part of this workshop, and I thank you for your attention. I will now turn the workshop back over to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lopez-Rodriguez. That was a superb presentation. Lots of resources for people to access. So thank you so much. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to let you know about the questions that you can ask. And so we're going to move on right to the Q&A now, and I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions. Bella?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So first question I'm going to give to Dr. Canola. The qualifying time period for a metastatic patient can drag on out so long, and sadly the patient's cancer has a chance to progress rapidly. Does the patient remain on any treatment during this waiting period? What is being done to speed up this approval cycle?
Dr. Messner, may I please ask you to repeat the question one more time? I couldn't hear you quite well.
Sure. The qualifying time period for a metastatic patient can drag out so long, and sadly, the patient's cancer has a chance to progress rapidly. Does the patient remain on any treatment during the waiting period? What is being done to speed up this approval cycle?
Very good question, and this is, you know, this is a barrier that we face and that I see in clinic when I talk to my patients all the time. The regulatory agencies, and here in the United States where I practice medical oncology, the FDA is the regulatory entity that gives us approval, and they work diligently to get us approval as soon as it's safe. Now, would you be on some form of treatment during this time? It's hard for me to answer that question without having the clinical context. Most of the time when we decide to switch therapy on a patient is because the cancer doesn't seem to be having a reaction to the medication that we're using, which sends the base that I tell my patients, this medication is causing no effect on the cancer and it's giving you side effects. So I often decide to keep my patients off therapy for the time being because it's causing them toxicity. But I will say to our listener that this is on a case-by-case basis.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Sheikh, since Signatora is approved by the FDA and clinical trials have been performed, when will more oncologists use it to monitor their high-risk patients, especially triples?
Yes, I think that's a good question. I think for breast cancer specifically, I would still recommend using Signatera in the context of a clinical trial because I think there's two pieces of it. You know, one is getting the test result, and then the second is, well, what do we do with that test result? And at this time, I think we need a little bit more information on how to guide both a positive and a negative test result for a patient with breast cancer.
Thank you so much. And for Dr. Canola, if a non-metastatic patient is ER and PR negative but HER2 low, will she be treated as a triple negative?
So that's a good question. We recently have data from the DESTINY studies. These DESTINYs have studied a medication called trastuzumab deruxtecan in multiple settings, and one of those settings was what we know as the HER2-low status. In the DESTINY trial that looked at this population with the HER2-low status, they have a small number of patients that were classified as triple negative based on their ER negativity, PR negativity. But being that said, in clinical practice, is a medication that we use, And it's a medication that I have used in some of my triple negative breast cancer patients that are HER2 low. And I have had very successful, you know, rates of response in my patients. So we do have that option with trastuzumab deruxtecan. And it's a great thing because that gives us another medication that we can use to treat our patients.
Okay, thank you. And these are really great questions, Dr. Sheikh. Should PD-L1 be standard lab at diagnosis of a triple? Keytruda can be given to those who have PD-L1. Would you give it to those who are PD-L1 negative? Why risk the potential side effects?
So this is a good question. So the way we approach PD-L1 testing varies based on the stage. So for people who have early stage breast cancer, we oftentimes will not check PD-L1. And the reason for that is because we know that patients, both who are PD-L1 positive and PD-L1 negative, can have a benefit from pembrolizumab. So all patients receive that therapy, regardless of their PD-L1 status. Unlike in the metastatic triple negative breast cancer setting, where the benefit was by patients who are PD-L1 positive. And so in that case, we do recommend testing PD-L1, and we recommend the addition of Keytruda for patients who are PD-L1 positive.
Excellent, thank you. This is a question from Dr. Canola. For those that are international patients, do clinical trials accept scans performed in the country of the patient rather than performed in the U.S. and billing?
I guess what our listener is alluding to is if they can participate in a clinical trial if they're residing in a different country. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. For those that are international patients, do clinical trials accept scans performed in the country of the patient rather than performing in the U.S. And billing?
This is a tough one because usually clinical trials are very heavily regulated. So most of the time when an institution opens a clinical trial, that means that the patient is going to be under their umbrella as far as their scans for follow-up, the blood work that they need for follow-up. So depending on the clinical trial that we're talking about, if it's perhaps an observational trial, patients that are living outside of the United States might be able to participate. But when it comes to an interventional clinical trial or a clinical trial in which we offer a drug to a patient, it will be very difficult to do it in under those settings. Most of the academic institutions in the country are able to at least evaluate and see those patients, and they can get them paired with different cancer centers that might be closer to them that have the same clinical trial. But for logistical reasons, it's actually better to have the patient on site if at all possible.
Thank you so much. And a question for Dr. Sheikh. What are the most common kinds of trials for TNBC? Do they typically only look at treatment or do they focus on prevention as well?
A lot of the clinical trials in triple negative breast cancer focus on treatment. However, there's a very, very large variety of trials that are, you know, all across the country. And so these will look at treatments for both early stage and metastatic. That being said, there's a lot of supportive care trials, generally speaking, as well. And depending on what the supportive care intervention may be, patients with triple negative breast cancer may be eligible for those studies as well.
Excellent. Thank you. So here's a question from one of our participants, Dr. Sheikh. Thank you for the wonderful presentations. I am wondering if there are any suggestions for any individuals who are looking to participate in clinical trials, but there do not seem to be any active ones that meet the inclusion criteria. For example, it seems the Tropion Breast 2 is not recruiting. If results are promising, how can a patient gain access to these new drugs?
Yes, absolutely. So I think, you know, the thing with clinical trials is that it's going to depend on the location. So not every study is going to be open in every location. And there's a very practical logistical component as well, as you have to think about how far is it feasible to travel. For most patients who have metastatic breast cancer, it's not easy to travel. So you really want to prioritize clinical studies that may be open closer to home. And that does mean that maybe not all drugs will be available, but there's the give and take of, you know, seeing which trial you're interested in, and also the practical component of, is that going to be logistically feasible for you to participate in? But the first step I would always start with is talking with your oncologist to see what kind of options may be available. Even if exact studies have closed to accrual, sometimes there can be studies that are, you know, looking at similar types of drugs. And so that could be a consideration as well. But I think your oncologist will be the point person to help direct what a good option may be in that case.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And another question for Dr. Canoa. NBC metastatic patient, Trodelvy for 1 year or clear PET scan. Trodelvy became intolerable due to side effects. What are my options at this point? If you could answer this in a general way, Dr. Canola.
Yeah, we have to keep in mind that sometimes we see patients that are exceptional responders, and I'm very happy for the listener. But, you know, one of the limiting steps of this drug is the fact that sometimes we have side effects that are difficult for our patients to manage. And I encourage this listener to discuss options with their medical oncologist. Sometimes we put patients on a break, we do those adjustments, or we, you know, kind of switch the schedule at or supportive measurements to make sure that the treatment is tolerable for those patients. But this is something that has to be discussed in a one-to-one basis to see what's the most appropriate therapy for this listener.
And Dr. Shaikh, can we still do a trial if we just finished treatment, are cancer-free at the moment, to monitor or prevent recurrence?
Absolutely. There certainly are clinical trials that are evaluating different modalities of cancer surveillance. So there's all different kinds of trials. There's, you know, treatment trials, imaging trials, surveillance trials. And so if you're interested, again, I would recommend discussing with your oncologist to see if there's any such trial that you'd be eligible for close to where you are. But there certainly are options for people even post-treatment to participate in trials.
Thank you. And for Dr. Canoa, how are tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes being examined in clinical trials?
So it depends on what you're looking at in the clinical trial and what's your area of research. A lot of researchers are doing this to try to understand better the tumor microenvironment and the potential pathways that we can use to attack cancer cells. So it really depends on the question that you're asking yourself as far as how you're looking at those TILs in the tumor cells. I think that's a broad question, and it can have many, many answers, but the short answer is it will depend on exactly what you're trying to investigate.
Thank you so much. Alman, here's a question for Dr. Canoa. I missed the names of the two study trials you mentioned. One was SG and pembrolizumab. I missed the name of the second one you mentioned that was for early recurrence.
Yes, happy to mention. So I mentioned two clinical trials, the two big groups. So one was the ASCEND clinical trials. One was ASCEND-03 and ASCEND-04. Main difference in between these two is that in one of the studies, ASCEND-03, patients were not eligible to get pembrolizumab, and ASCEND-04, they were. And the other study that I mentioned was TROPION-02, which is the one that looked at patients that had early recurrence with metastatic disease. These studies were presented in, TROPION was presented in ESMO, the European Society of Medical Oncology, so it might be a good place to look for resources. And the ASCEND studies were presented actually in San Antonio Breast, and there is also a publication in the New England Journal of Medicine that goes in detail on these ASCEND studies.
Thank you so much. For Dr. Shaikh, what are the most common kinds of trials for TNBC? Do they typically only look at treatment, or do they focus on prevention as well?
There are, I think, a large variety of trials. There's prevention trials, there's treatment trials, there's supportive care trials. So there's definitely a big mix of different types of trials for different indications.
Well, we've really covered a lot of questions here. I think if there's any more questions that we might have. This is a question from one of our participants. I was frustrated, and this is for Dr. Shaikh. I was frustrated that the tumor had regained its pre-chemotherapy size within days once the drug ceased to be effective. If the tumor shrinks to a size suitable for radiation therapy, can it be eliminated with radiation?
Unfortunately, I think it's hard to answer patient-specific questions like this because there's so many clinical details and characteristics that are important in coming up with a treatment plan. But I'm sorry to hear that, and I would encourage you to talk with your oncologist to see how they would guide you moving forward.
Excellent. I'm going to ask our speakers now to provide takeaways, so we're going to move on and to our speaker providing takeaways. I'm going to ask Ms. Canola to start with her first takeaway, and it would just be like a minute or 2 minutes of what you'd like people to take away from today's program. Oh, Dr. Canola, would you like to provide a takeaway?
Thank you, Dr. Messner. So for our listeners, please talk to your doctors to better understand what's going on with your health and what is the stage and the treatment plan for your particular cancer case. I want to encourage all of you to participate in clinical trials because this is the way that we move the needle forward. We want to be there for the patients that are going to be dealing with these diseases in the future, and we want to have the best therapy available for them. Thank you so much for joining today, and keep fighting. You know, the medical community is full of hope, and we really want to bring forward this newer therapies to make sure that all patients living with cancer are having a better life, and we hope to get rid of this disease at some point in the future. Thank you for listening and tuning in to this.
Well, thank you so much. And Dr. Shaikh, your takeaway, just a 1 or 2 minute takeaway you'd like people to take away from today's program.
Absolutely. You know, thank you so much to everybody for being here today. I think clinical trials are a wonderful option to consider when appropriate for you and when it aligns with what your goals are for treatment. And I think with telehealth appointments, hopefully that can help some of the geographical constraints that can arise as well. It's important to remember that you have a team with you, your personal friends, your family, and then also your clinical team with your physician, nurses, PAs, nurse practitioners, everybody who works with you, hopefully to guide you along the way. And, I really want to applaud you all for taking the time to tune in to learn more about this process, whether it's for yourself or for a loved one. And thank you all for your time.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And Ms. Brothers, your takeaway for people today.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. Our takeaway is, to echo the doctors, looking at clinical trials is really just a great thing to do because then you have more options. And if you visit tnbctrials.org, you'll find a nice user-friendly way to look into those. Also, just a quick reminder about TNBC Awareness Month next month, March. And so visit us at tnbcday.org because it kicks off on March 3rd.
Oh, thank you so much. And Ms. LaPietra.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. My takeaway for all of the callers here today is to really think about what questions and what information you need in order to make those treatment decisions going forward, and that you're not alone in this. You have a lot of support through our organizations. We're happy to talk with you and provide language and give you feedback and the resources that you need. Wish you well this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank our participants also for asking such incredibly great questions. We may not have gotten to everyone's question, but we try to take as many of your questions as possible. So I just want to thank you for that. And also, I do want to remind all of you that it seems that many of you have commented that weekends, holidays, weekends and holidays are very hard for you sometimes, and evenings for you to access your healthcare team. So be sure that you always ask your healthcare team, who do you call weekends, evenings, and holidays? Because during the day, usually people do pick up the phone and talk with you, but it's actually the issue of at night. That's the issue that people have a hard time getting their healthcare team. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all, and remember, you're not alone. You have all these resources that we've mentioned today. We will be sending you a SurveyMonkey evaluation, which will include, which will go out in about a week from now. And in that evaluation, there's an evaluation of the program itself, but also there will be resources, any resources that we mentioned during the program, those will be there for you as well. So again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.